Okay, so join me on the podcast today is none other than Liv Clifford. Now, first of all, I'm glad you set this up. We finally be able to set up this conversation. And before we actually started the podcast, we were talking and I was like, you said, I'll just send you my schedule. And then I looked at your schedule and I thought to myself, holy crap. Like, how is it, like, the first question I got to ask you, how do you make the time for what it is that you do? Like, how do you do it?
It's a busy schedule, definitely underestimating. I'm always constantly on the go from like 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, all the way through to 10, sometimes 11 o'clock at night, depending on work and uni schedule as well. Mm. But you gotta sacrifice things to be able to get the goal that you want to achieve.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely agree on that point. So let's start off right off the bat. How was training this morning?
This morning was pretty busy. It was basically we did this morning was just fitness based, so lots of repetition of drills over and over again till you completely hit the wall, basically.
So let's say for the people who have no idea what it is that we're talking about and all that for the audio form, Liv, so let the world know right now, what is it you're preparing for?
I'm preparing for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics or 2021 Olympics for karate.
Very nice. Now, so you've been practicing karate for how long now?
19 years. I started when I was 3. I just turned 21.
Wow. Congratulations. How was your 21st?
I was busy. Big night.
Yeah. That's very good. And what did you guys do? Did you guys like go out or did you stay indoors?
I had a huge house party. I had about 115 of my closest friends all come. And yeah, it was awesome. My family and everybody from up north where I'm originally from all came down to Perth and to celebrate with me. It was pretty awesome.
That's awesome. So let's talk about that. Liv, you said you came from up north. Where were you from originally?
So originally I'm from a small town called Donga. It's about 4.5 hours north of Perth. It's about 1/2 hour south of Geraldton. So very small town, probably about 5,000 people in it in total. Okay.
So I'm guessing you were born there and you grew up there. When did you first come to Perth or when did you decide to make the move to come to Perth?
So when I was about 11, I had a conversation with one of my coaches at the time. And I was driving 3 days a week with my mum. Down to Perth and back for me to train and be on the state team and the Australian team. And mum and dad sat down and had a conversation and my coach at the time and were like, I think best if we send you to boarding school in Perth so you can follow not only a better education path but also follow your dreams in karate. And so basically I moved down to Perth in 2012 and became a boarder at St. Maria College.
Okay, so did you move down here with your family or by yourself?
By myself. Yeah, so I moved down at, well, I was 11 at the time.
Oh my God. Well, what was that like for you moving down here on your own at 11?
It was very interesting. Like I never had so many people around me at the time, let alone so many girls. So going to like an all girls environment and being someone who does typically a different sport to what girls do, it was very interesting. And at times girls were a bit like, didn't know how to comprehend what I was doing. But yeah, it was a great experience and I wouldn't change it for the world. And the education I received at that school as well, whilst being able to train full time, was amazing. And something I always take for granted, was amazing.
So you trained full time throughout your high school and I would say primary school career as well?
Yeah. So from year 6 onwards, basically, I'd say I took it seriously. I joined the state team at 9 years old and I won my first nationals at 10. And from there, I haven't lost the national championships since. So I'm going 11 years straight now with a national title.
Wow, that's a big achievement.
Yeah, so it's been busy.
So I gotta ask him because we're on that. Yeah, sorry, you going?
Oh yeah, and then I joined the national team when I turned 17. Wow. So yeah, and started traveling internationally and competing overseas.
Okay, so let's get into that then. But first of all, you've been practicing karate for quite some time. What style did you say that you practiced?
Ah, so that's a bit of a tricky one. I started off with Wado karate. Mm-hmm. I then changed from there to Shotokan, and about 3 years ago, no, 2.5, I changed to Shikaru style.
Okay.
But what I actually do in karate competition is not related to my style of karate. Okay. So it's differentiation of your basics and your katas, but it's not relevant to what I use for competition.
I understand, because the reason why I had to ask was because I did I did Shotokan karate by the time I was age 9 to about 13 years old, and then so I got quite familiar with the kata. I was quite familiar with the sparring, and then I had a buddy of mine 3 years ago introduce me to the old I'm gonna get butchered for if I say this incorrectly, but I think it's pronounced Kyokushin. It's one of the traditional old school.
Yokushin.
Did I say that correctly? Yeah?
Yokushin. Close, yeah.
Oh, so close. So very close. That was the very old school traditional one. And then I actually looked at what the step process was and the kata was. And I was like, this is completely different to what I had to do. So that leads me to my question. What was the transition like for you in between different styles?
In terms of my fighting, there was no difference. I changed clubs for better coaching purposes and a step up in my career. But in terms of classes and learning basics, every single style that I did was complete, that I am doing, is completely different to one another in terms of length of stance or types of punches that you would do. So everything's different, but it's been an amazing experience to do all like the three that I've done so far, because I have a bit of a broader knowledge when it comes to going overseas and competing, and I can see different katas when the kata athletes are competing, and I can compare them and be like, oh, that's because of this, why they won that round instead of that one, because their kata is different or they've stuffed up something. And it's cool to see, because some other people will be like, oh, I just know Shotokan, or I just know Shikaru. And so you kind of get a basic understanding of all of them, which I think is awesome. It's a fundamental, I think it's really fundamental to have different styles up your belt to be able to see them and understand.
That's good. So let's talk about your time in competing and all that. Now, when you said you went to your states at, you started competing states at 12, 11, 12?
Nine.
Okay. So at the age, wow, that's incredibly young. So what was it like then being 9 years old competing at for the state titles?
I think I was so, at the time, I was just out there having fun and there was no pressure. And I was just out there enjoying myself. I mean, I didn't take anything seriously then, I think, until probably like I got to my first nationals and I came in and I got bronze, and I was so angry with myself at 9 years of age and being so angry that I didn't win and I got a bronze medal at my first national championships. And I like, there's photos of me that I've got of me on the medal podium, and I'm like super sour face, like not smiling or anything. And then only a year later, going back to nationals, and that one was in Sydney, and I won my first nationals, and there's a compared difference in the podium and the smile on the platform. It was so funny, but I think I started taking myself seriously, and I was like, I don't want to lose to people. I hate it. Like, it's possibly to me losing like a match. Yes, you gain heaps of experience, but I find it frustrating. So I'm like, I can't lose. I've got to be better than everybody else. And I think that's why I have such a hectic schedule, because I want to be the best of the best. I don't want to be someone who's mediocre.
I understand. So it sounds, the way I'm hearing it is, would you agree that you've been quite naturally competitive for most of your life?
Completely. I come from a family that's quite competitive in all sports that we've done. Okay. So yeah, I'd say naturally very competitive.
Yeah. So tell me about that then. What was that like growing up in a competitive family?
I think it was awesome, because it pushed each of us. Like, my eldest brother played polo and polo cross for Australia. Mm-hmm. And he played state basketball for the Drum Buccaneers, and he played in the understates for the Wildcats and things like that. He was an amazing basketballer. And so we would spend hours just practicing and trying to get better at everything that we did, and it made us more competitive. And my eldest brother even did karate as well. He did state championships and stuff, but he's a bit more of a gentle soul than me. And he ended up actually hurting somebody at one of the tournaments, and he quit. He was like, turned to me and mum, he's like, I can't do this. I can't hurt people. But I love the sport. So Kia ended up giving it up, but he chose a different path with other sports, which is amazing. And mum and dad were both really good sportsmen and athletes growing up as well. Dad was a professional sailor for Australia and windsurfer. Mm-hmm. And mum used to play state level netball and things like that. So we're all really competitive, and we'd do anything for each other just to get better, basically.
Wow. Okay, so a whole family of competitive athletes. So
yeah.
Did your parents ever do karate or any form of martial arts? Or was it just something your brother
not
picked
all.
Up and you did? None at all. Okay. And
Elder brother started it, and I had to be better than him. So I ended up staying with it though.
Good for him. That's a little one up over him. So I'll give you that for sure. So in your whole time of competing, did you ever experiment with any other forms of martial arts, or was it just always the karate and transitioning across different styles?
I have done BJJ a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really awesome, because we can transition BJJ into karate. Obviously, instead of for like all your takedown skills, except for in karate, we can't use two hands to do a takedown. We have to use one hand. So okay. I did a lot of sessions one-on-one asking how you would do different takedowns differently and things like that, which I found really interesting. And yeah, so I implemented some of the stuff that I learned from BJJ to karate.
Okay, so just let me ask, why is it you can't use two hands for a takedown?
Because there is, in karate, because it was stand-up, and we had a level of respect kind of thing, we didn't want to make karate almost into a full transition, like competition karate now into a almost a MMA, because it's a fine line. Mm-hmm. And what was happening was we were two-handed takedowns, and sometimes when the force of the throws that we were doing actually injured other athletes, and we had a couple of knockouts and concussions from the throws. So what happened was we changed it to one-handed takedowns, but you had to be able to do it within 3 seconds, that takedown. So you get into the clinching position and you have to do that once, the one-handed takedown. And it's a lot faster and it's a lot cleaner, and the referees can see it and can score it a lot better when you punch them on the ground or after, versus like having full hands, two hands and throwing. So it was a bit more sports rather. Like sports karate rather than going traditional. So it was just a different change in different direction. But I think maybe after the Olympics, they'll go back to two-handed takedowns. So it all depends, basically.
Okay. That's okay. So let's talk about some of the rules then. I mean, I could barely remember, but back when I was, I was younger when I was competing, I remember that karate is scored on points depending on the type of where you land and what you throw. So can you give us a little bit of insight into, like, let's say, that national level rules?
Okay. So all rules across the board are the same, whether you're state, junior, national or international competitor. So that's all the same rules. So any punches, face or body is 1 point. Any body kick, so you can have your side kicks, your roundhouse kicks or anything to the body, is 2. Any takedown or head kick is 3 points, or a sweep, as long as you immediately hit the person and make the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basic scoring.
I remember it. What do you get if you sweep someone and you punch them in their back? Is that more points, or do they just score the sweep?
It's still 3 points now. They changed the rules for the Olympics, and so it's a lot more clearer for a spectator to watch. So it became a lot clearer, a lot easier to score. Any takedown or sweep is 3 points, no matter where on the body you hit.
And how long are the rounds?
Uh, before, this changed only 2 years ago. It used to be 2 minutes for women and 3 minutes for men, but yay equality. We've now got 3 minutes for the women and 3 minutes for men.
Okay. And so let's talk about now in your time and your progression. How long did it take for you to get your black belt?
I got my first black belt at 12 in Shotokan style.
Okay.
And I've kept that belt. And when I transitioned only 2 years ago to my new style, I haven't graded over in the time, really, because I've been so busy with competition. Like, I had such a hectic schedule trying to get everything sorted for the Olympics in terms of, like, I'd have 4 weeks at home to train and get ready, like, along with uni, and then I'd fly off to Turkey or to Paris or Morocco or Chile. So I was constantly every 4 weeks going to another country to fight. So I haven't yet graded to my new black belt for my new style, but I hope to do that maybe the end of this year.
That's wow. I mean, those places, that's a pretty big resume. So what's it like when you're traveling? Like, do you travel together as a team? Do you travel just your coach? Or what's the situation?
It tends to differ on what type of tournaments we're going to. So when we've got karate competitions around the world, we've got Series A competitions that are international, and that's for athletes outside of the top 50 ranking who are trying to get into the top 50 to compete at Premier League events. So if you go to a Series A, you might have 150 or 200 competitors in one event. Yeah. And it's huge. Versus going to just a Premier League event, which is only open to the top 50, they might have only 40 at that competition. So at a Series A, usually we don't have coaches and we tend to travel by ourselves. And same for Premier Leagues, maybe we'll have a coach. But usually we tend to go by ourselves, and a couple of athletes have actually got coaching passes now, so we can go in for each other and coach, because it's too expensive to have coaches come over and just sit there in the chair for us. So we tend to do coaching passes ourselves and coach each other in the chair for Australia. Except for World Championships, we take a full team, we all stay together, we have a full team of coaches along with doctors, physios, you name it, everything for a World Championships. But for Premier League, we tend to go by ourselves and try and make it. We, as Australian athletes, we might try and stay in an Airbnb all together and cut costs.
Oh,
because
wow.
Obviously it's $1,500, $2,000 just to get over there for us, whereas other countries, $200 maybe.
And you would have to pay for all the flights and everything yourself?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, wow. So,
that
explains why you do all those things in a day. I mean, training to university to work. So that's actually breakdown. What is a typical day like for you, Liv?
Okay, so... So on a Monday, okay, we'll go through Monday and a Tuesday. We'll go through a Tuesday because Tuesday and Wednesday are my busiest days.
Yep.
So Tuesday morning, I'm up by quarter past five. I'm getting ready and I leave for the house. I go straight to my gym, which is West Australian Sports Performance, who sponsor me, and all of my gym programming out of them. It's all for free and they're amazing guys. So I'm there till about 7:15. And then from about, I'll come home, have a quick shower, chill out for a little bit. Tuesday. Monday, not again. So Tuesday, I'll get up at still 5 o'clock, 5:15. And I actually drive all the way from, I live in Netherlands. So I drive all the way out to Wangara, where my dojo is, to train. And I'll train there till maybe 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. I'll come home, have a quick shower, get ready, and then I go to uni from about 10:30 onwards, 10:30, 11, all the way on until 5:30. And then from there, I go straight to work. And on a Tuesday night, I usually work at a pub or CAPES, if you know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I work there from about 6 o'clock till closing. And then my Wednesday morning, which is my most busiest out of the week, and I'm usually like so exhausted by the end of it. Wednesday morning, I'm up at 5:15. I go to the gym where I train WASP. From there, I go straight to my other job and I work there from 8 o'clock all the way to 5:30 in the afternoon. I come home, have a quick shower, get changed, and then I go to my second job and I work all the way till 10, maybe 11 o'clock that night. And then I get up Thursday morning and I go and train karate again. And it's constant. It's so busy. And like it's Saturday, like this morning, getting up at like 6:30 to go to training by 7. And I was just like, I just want to stay in bed till like 9 o'clock. That's my dream right now. But I've got a goal. I've got a competition in 4 weeks. So I've got to be like strict and just keep going, keep pushing, keep grinding, basically.
Well, that's the next thing I got to ask. Like with someone's schedule like that, like, do you like make time for any activities or hobbies that help you like take your mind off things? Do you have anything you like to, other hobbies that you like to pursue?
I like to surf and chill out when I have the time to be able to do it. I also have a German Shepherd, so he's like, yes, like my best friend, and he goes everywhere with me. So he's my complete chill out zone. So I get home and I'm just like with him chilling out. I'll take him for a walk. I'll chill out. And then on weekends, I try my hardest to kind of schedule things with friends to be able to get out of this like zone of always just working, grinding and things like that. So on the weekends, like usually today I'm working all day, but I got today off because I actually have a wedding this afternoon. So I try and schedule some time off to go and see people instead of being the little hobbit, as my friends call me.
Is that what they call you, the hobbit? Because never leave the home.
Yeah, because I always work.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, the fact that you got that much drive, I mean, at a young age, but working two jobs, that's insane. So you said you work at a bar. What was the other one?
I work at a car wash in Claremont.
Good. Well, I mean,
it's not classy. It's not an amazing job, but it's work and it's consistent and it's hard work and I get money for it. So.
There you go. But pays the bills so you can go and travel and do the things that you do. Now, because of COVID, when it hit last year, I'm guessing that must have been pretty difficult with the way things were going because you couldn't travel. What did you do during COVID last year to like, you know, keep yourself active and keep yourself in that, what is it, hustle mentality?
I think the COVID lockdown was probably one of the hardest things we as athletes all had to deal with because we'd been preparing for competitions and all of a sudden it kind of just went to a halt. And most of our trainings also went to a halt as well. And we found that a lot of athletes were like suffering with anxiety and things from it because we didn't know what to do. And we were stuck. Not that it's a bad thing because we're in Australia and we're in the safest place in the world right now with Corona, but we had a sense of, I feel like I'm missing out. Like I feel like I've been in Australia for too long and it feels almost weird for like most of our athletes. And that way I spent most of my lockdown. I went actually up home. I didn't stay in Perth for the lockdown because my university all went online. My work had all cancelled basically. So I went home to my mum and dad to own a grocery store. And I worked for them and my dad, who was he's super competitive, but he's one of the most placid people I've ever met in my life. And he would get out his karate gear to come and train with me because I was struggling mentally, going like, I don't know what to do. And I was struggling with training and I found it so hard to keep myself like aligned because I knew that the Olympics would be cancelled straight away. I knew there was no way that the World Championships in Dubai was going to happen. And all of a sudden it was just like one by one every week, all these competitions were just like slowly getting cancelled and cancelled. And you'd be training so hard and you're like, it was pent up frustration, I think. And so dad would get out and no experience at all with karate and he'd get out and he'd be like, oh, you can come train with me. And he'd get in the gym and he was amazing, absolutely amazing. And that's something that will remain in my heart forever, that my dad, who has no experience, was willing to get out and help me because I wasn't dealing with it properly. And just amazing. And I ended up locking myself down and training three times harder. I had never been that fit before. And I was just smashing goals one by one, but I had no competition to show off what I'd been doing. And I think that was kind of my built-up frustration. But besides that, I was feeling better than I'd ever felt. I was training harder than I'd ever trained before. And I'd been home with my family for the longest I'd ever been since I was 12 years old. And that was probably a blessing for me. I got to spend some quality time with my family. So that was cool.
Well, that's good. That's great to hear, because I understand for a lot of when COVID struck last year, that was when we came up with the idea. That was when me and my best mate, we fully came up with the idea that we're going to commit to this podcast. And we start taking a look. It was something we would talk about for 3 years since we known each other. And then when COVID struck, I was still working as he wasn't. And then he needed someone to do his time. So we set everything up. And then when I started talking to athletes about what did you do through during COVID, the ones that I come across that are the most successful were the ones that took this whole COVID period as actually an opportunity to get better. Like, some guys told me stories that they would literally steal stuff, or they would take stuff from their gym, bring it home, make homemade equipment. And I think that what you just said really is important, because now that you've able to get through this whole like pandemic, you know, not being able to travel around, not being able to do what you love, but turn it into something positive, that's probably one of the best skills we can have as athletes in order to grow. So what the next question I was going to say is, we talked about studying at a university. So what are you studying again?
So I'm studying nursing at Notre Dame. In my final year as well. So everything's so busy.
Yeah, good for you. So if you're doing all the way in Notre Dame, that's all the way in Fremantle. So what do you do? Do you have to drive down there, or do you do it all online? Because I know that NASA's
You drive? Yeah, so for Notre Dame, we used to have a rule where we had to be there for all of our lectures and everything. But because of COVID, actually, all of our lectures have come online, which is actually something that saved me a lot of time during the day. So I can work more, and then just at the end of the night, I'll sit down and do my lecture notes and stuff. So I'm actually only at uni on a Tuesday from 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock onwards, all day till 5:30. And I'm just smashing out all of my practical units and things that I actually have to be there for. And the rest I'm just online, and I'm grinding hard, basically.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed online, because I did not. for me, I'm a very practical learner. I like to be in there. I like going to I actually like to enjoy being at university, enjoying the lectures, enjoying interacting with the people and talking. And then when it went online and, like, you know, doing Zoom with classmates, it was like, I can't just sit here. I got to do something. I'll be like eating food or Netflix in the background, or I'll be changing my background to something stupid so I make everyone laugh because I'm just boring. But that's good. So moving on now, once you've graduated and, you know, you've got your degree, are you trying, what will be happening then for you? Are you going to take nursing full time or part time, or how would you find a way to keep karate going?
Oh, I will find a way no matter what. But I think I would like to take it at least full time, and I'm hoping to go into emergency nursing, so ED basically. So I'll be there 5 days a week, which is from like seven. Our hours are usually from 7 till 3, or from 3 till 11, or 11 till 4. So it's actually not too bad. I can find time around it. So for instance, I think I'm probably going to try and take most of the night shifts working at ED, sleep for 3 or 4 hours when I get home, and then go and do my training all throughout the day. So that's probably my plan, but I haven't got there yet, and we'll just have to wait and see, and I'll replan and I'll schedule things around it, basically.
Awesome. So let's go back to competing, okay? Can you give me, like, in basic form, what's your training like in the weeks building up to your competition?
So that's what I'm into right now. Mm-hmm. So I've got 4 weeks. I'm about to fly out to Sydney to go and compete in the Australian Open. Mm-hmm. So basically right now, all of my gym sessions are heavy weights, short reps. So getting that real explosive power, all of that type of training for my gym programming. And then for my karate stuff at the moment, we're still doing a lot of scenario working and what type of attacks, what we'd use or defensive moves in terms of if this person's going to do this punch, what would I use outside of that? And we'd just be constantly drilling that and drilling that. And then, so that's two, we do that 2 or 3 days a week. And then 1 day a week, we'll actually do sparring sections where we're putting this into implement of like testing, trying to make that person do what we're wanting them to do and then be able to score off it or completely just be able to fight again. So we're doing complete matches. We do an hour of matches, which is roughly 10 fights in an hour.
Wow.
We're just smacking them through like constant. And for me, I don't actually have any females to train with. So I'm with a bunch of boys and we just constantly rotate through each other. But it's awesome because you've got different heights, different weights, different speeds, and we're constantly training. And then by the time I get to an actual competition, I feel like I'm 3 times over-prepared because I'm fighting with boys rather than girls. And it's amazing. It's an amazing experience because you go from being fighting 3 times faster to almost what it feels like to me. When I'm fighting, it feels like I can see things in slow motion and I can kind of react 3 times faster than most other people, which I think is really awesome. So, yeah, but training is hectic at the moment, but it's awesome. Yeah. I love it.
Good. So what would you say is has been, the biggest change to your game plan coming into the Sydney, Sydney Nationals, National Qualifiers?
Australian Open. So it's a selection for the Australian team again, basically. What have I changed? I've definitely changed my fighting style a lot. I've gone from being, I tend to use a bit of, we'll start that one again. I tend to usually be an anticipator fighter. So I tend to like to make people react and then react from there. And basically I've changed the last couple of months to becoming someone who's comfortable with just taking the opportunity away from them and just scoring when I want to score instead of going, oh yeah, I'll make them do this and then I'll score. So I'm becoming more of an attacking fighter, which I think is needed for European and international circuit instead of being the person who waits too long. So now I'm starting to get a little bit more aggressive in my fighting style, I think.
Yeah, very nice. Do you reckon that sort of comes from sparring with the boys all the time, or is this something that you've sort of developed?
I think it's something mentally that I've changed about myself because I was noticing, like, I would be in Australia, I couldn't actually get girls to attack me. I guess this sounds really smart ass, but it's hard to get girls to want to engage in a fight versus when I go overseas and internationally and you've got girls from Turkey or Iran and they're ready to take your head off, so you've got to be ready. Versus in Australia, girls are a little bit more reluctant. I feel like they're sometimes, I scare people. I have a tendency because my face is very, I've got a definitely an RBF face, and I tend to be pretty scary. And I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't have this face so girls would attack me because I'm not doing enough. And so now I'm like, if they're not going to take the opportunity, I'm just going to take everything and just score no matter what. And I'm trying to score in most of my fights. So we have a 3-minute fight, but if you're the first person to 8-0, you can do it in 20 seconds, theoretically. So now my mindset is, okay, then if I know this fighter isn't good enough to be at my level, I'm just going to win the fight within 30 seconds, game over. I'm not going to wait for that full 3 minutes and play with them because I don't think it's right. So my whole game plan now is just score and just be like, who cares who's in front of me instead of, yeah, playing around with people.
Okay, so let's talk about day of competition, okay? So you're in Sydney, you know, you got around 6 hours before you're competing, you're broken up. Do you go through some sort of like pre-performance routine when you compete?
Yes, I'm definitely very like strict of what I to leading up to my fight that day. From the moment I wake up, I've usually got music. I've got it on my computer at the start and I'm playing music while I'm doing my hair. I put my hair up religiously in a high ponytail and I've got it always slicked straight back. And then I put my headphones on and I'm like, don't talk to me the whole day, basically. Don't talk to me until I'm ready to talk to you. And I've had people like my mum and dad, like days of competition, like mum or dad are asking like, oh, Liv, have you got this or that? And I've just taken my heads off and normally screamed at people like, leave me alone until I'm ready to talk or like I'm ready to fight because I need to get into my own head. I'm very chilled out, very like relaxed, but until I'm on that day of competition, I'm like so like aggressive and I'm like just very one, like my mind is narrow and I'm like anything else that's got no relevance to my fight, I don't want to hear about it kind of thing. So like start with headphones, I've got it on all day. I usually try to have a couple of bananas. I'm not much of an eater before I fight. I tend to get really nervous, so I don't. Mm-hmm. So I'll eat a couple of bananas, Powerade, keep it nice and simple, very simple. Foods, a couple of carbs. I'll have maybe like a pasta in the morning. That sounds really weird, but a pasta for breakfast. And I'll keep it very simple. And I'll take a pillow. I'll go to the stadium. I'll watch a couple of fights and then I go to sleep. I will go to sleep for 5 hours until 2 hours before I'm about to fight. Then I get up because I find I get too agitated watching fights and I'm like, I overexert my energy and I'm just like, oh, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to fight. Let's go. And I'm like, no, you've got to calm yourself. So I will go literally be lying in the stadium while there's people fighting and I'll just be dead, out cold, sleeping with my headphone on. And then about 2 hours prior, I get all of my gear on depending on what color I am. So maybe I'm red or maybe I'm blue. I'll get my gear on. I'll spend 30 minutes stretching nice and lightly, getting limber. And then I go through about 40 minutes. I'll go through all of my techniques nice and slow, probably like 40% of doing multiple, like starting from single attacks to double attacks, multiple attacks to different throws, different kicks. And I'll swap from the attacking to anticipation or countering attacks, what I'm going to do for those. And then literally 15 minutes before I'm about to fight, I'm going to be doing two of every single technique and it's going to be 100%. It's going to have me doing my ki eyes 100% and then I'm done. I'm ready to go. Don't, like, I'm there. I'm in the moment. I'm good. I'm ready to go. And then I walk out. Referee calls my name. We put our hands up to, like, acknowledge that we're there. I'll bow on the side, like, before I'll actually walk on because it's a 10-by-10-meter mat. Basically, and like you bow to each other like this and then you walk onto the center and then you fight. But before I do that, I like bow first and like I jump, move my neck side to side, I like tap both of my legs, get a little bit limber, I walk on and then I bow to my coach, to the other coach of the opponent, to the referee, and then I'll bow to the opponent and shake their hand and then I'm ready. And like my whole face will be like from smiling at like 7 o'clock in the morning, just dead stone cold, like I'm about to kill you. But that's it. That's my complete strict routine up until I actually get on the mat and fight.
Wow. So you've got literally everything nailed down right up until, you know, after the match started as well. Okay. So how did you start doing this? Is this a routine that's built up over time, or is it something you've been doing for quite some time now?
I think it definitely built up over the time, but it's become kind of strict for the past, I'd say, 6 years. It's become strict like that. But before then, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm just out here to have fun, but I'm still doing karate kind of thing. But I started taking things seriously when I wanted to go the next step and be an elite athlete competing for Australia, and I was like, no, I need to be ready, I need to be organized at all stages. And then it just became a routine and I haven't changed it, and it feels good. I'm organized. It's almost like a bit like Rafa Nadal does between his sets in tennis. He plays with his nose and does the ear thing. It's almost a bit like that, but it keeps me organized.
Precious there. Okay, so just a couple more just to clear up. Now, let's talk about the karate sport as a whole. Obviously, it's been around for so long. It's a very, very well-known martial art. What are some ways in which you believe the sport can use to grow or at least get better?
I think our rules need to change a little bit more to become more orientated for outside people to understand what's going on, because we still speak in Japanese, like the referees will speak in Japanese. And if you're looking from it from a point of view and you're seeing a referee going, aka, doranzuki, yuko, you have no idea what that means. Like, that's a referee going, red person, 1 point.
They still saying hajime? Is that, and you say fight?
Yeah. Keep it going. So I think in that point of view, it needs to change a little bit. And I think at times we could almost implement something a little bit like what the Taekwondo athletes have done, where the sensors around, like they have head guards and body guards, which will actually already acknowledge the point given. So like if you hit them at a certain sensor, it'll score instantly, instead of being on like a referee's point of view, where they're like, oh, you're from Australia, maybe I'll score you, but that person's from Japan, they're definitely going to score. So sometimes you have to be able to eliminate point of view from other people. So I think maybe the next step for karate is putting sensors into bodyguards and face guards, maybe. But okay. It's a long way to go, and things that can change.
Awesome. Well, that's actually very valid, because I didn't know about the sensors. I knew that they wear the guards, but I didn't know that they had sensors within the guards.
All Taekwondo athletes international have those sensors in their guards and basically the score. Whereas in karate, we have guards, but we don't have any sensors in them.
So it's not like in the Karate Kid where there's like no guards, still multicolored gis and personalities.
No, we've got white gis with either red down the paneling or blue on the sides, and then you've got your sponsor down here and your country here, and then on the back as well.
Nice. Okay. So just before we wrap this up, is there any shout outs you want to give or any people you want to thank?
Oh, shout out to my personal coach Mike and Dion, the best of the best from Shotokan. They give me everything and so much more. I can't thank them enough for it. The other one is WASP, which is West Australian Sports Performance. They're in Willerton, amazing strength and conditioning guys. They are the best of the best. They train athletes from not just karate athletes all the way through tennis, swimmers. They're the best of the best, and they're just next level. And finally is Arawaza Australia. They, they're my sponsor for all my karate gear, which are amazing. And I can't thank them enough. Yeah, that's my shout out. And to mum and dad and Kia and Dylan for just being the most amazing people in my life.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Liv. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do this. All the best for Sydney. And I'll see you when you get back, okay? All the best.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
All right. So just hold right.